Hello and welcome to episode 135 of the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. Gamification is a topic that has been super prominent recently, with many tech startups using the concept for anything from to-do lists to weather apps. But is gamification a good idea when it comes to parenting? I'm Derek Mast, and here to talk with me about this topic is my good friend and fellow parent, Craig Ellis. How's it going, Craig?
Good, thanks, Derek. How are you?
Pretty good. Excited to dive in.
Yeah, let's do it.
Without further ado.
This came across my feed. I can't remember how exactly, but there's a Wired article called Kids Are Master Manipulators, So Use Game Theory Against Them. And maybe this won't be the best topic to broach with you, because I know you and your wife have a podcast that kind of touches fairly heavily on parenting, and you obviously have some fairly, set ideas, although you're learning as you go.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We are set. If anything, we are set to learn, not set to stay in one opinion.
Now, but you do have it sounds like you've got fairly, like, we would rather do this than this, and we think this is a good idea, and we're not so keen on it. Like, you've got kind of preferred methods that you think you'll follow.
But believe me, I still have no idea what I'm doing. So, there's a tension there.
Yeah, and I think probably a lot of the baby boomers are still saying the same thing. So,
about us or about them?
No, about them. Like, I don't know if, well, probably both, let's be real.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever actually master parenting. I think it's one of those things that you probably always learn.
It's definitely a continuum.
But anyway, the first thing I thought is, well, Derek's going to hate the title, because it instantly labels kids as master manipulators, and he's probably not going to think that's a good way to approach your children. Am I right?
I didn't know if you would know how I would respond to this or not. So I was really interested to see how this conversation would go. And actually, I talked to my wife about this, kind of like, you know, prepping for the show. It's nice to talk with her about some topics sometimes, mm-hmm. like this, especially this, since, you know, we're kind of parenting together. And her response to me was, I didn't really say anything. I kind of let her talk. And her first thing was like, I hate everything about this article.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Well, I tend to agree, but I think we can go some different ways with the idea of gamification in parenting.
Maybe we'll
get into it.
Well, let's see where we go. I mean, I'm in two minds about the title. Let's not get too hung up on the title,
yes,
because people are going to wonder what the article's actually about. But, you know, on the one side, I don't think it's great to just label children as something completely negative when they're actually a great blessing in our lives. On the other hand, even from a fairly young age, I noticed a tendency towards sin or sinful nature in my son. I guess the total depravity thing was kind of hit home when you have a 6-month-old or an 8-month-old who is actually at the age of understanding at least some things. Mm-hmm. And then you tell them something, or you ask them something, you sort of communicate with them in a way that's appropriate for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they look at you and then smile and then do exactly what you've told them or asked them not to do. And for them, it's a game. So I'm kind of like, well, maybe if it's a game to them, maybe making it a game for the adults is not an unwise thing. But I guess we should start a little bit more broadly with what is gamification, just mm-hmm. for people who aren't necessarily aware. We did do an episode on this way, way back in the first season, I think it was, which was episode 59, Gaming Spirituality, where we talked about, from memory, we're talking about scripture memory apps and things like that, and also a few different, that may have been another episode, but we talked about some of the big industry sort of applications of gamification and gaming addiction and things like that. So, but we didn't apply it to parenting, and I guess that's what this is. So apologies if you're not a parent, you may want to skip the episode, but we'd encourage you to still listen, because you might learn something or whatever that is useful to you down the track.
Mm-hmm.
Gamification, how would you define it? I've got a definition up my sleeve, but I'll let you, if you've got a definition you want to throw into the mix, I'll let you go for it.
So gamification is a way to incentivize people to do something that, you know, the game master, whoever it is, wants you to do. So, like, for a to-do app, I mean, and you can gamify stuff yourself. Like, you can make things fun for yourself. You're giving yourself incentives that are perhaps, you know, not the ultimate reason why you want to be doing it, but it's something that, like, you can manipulate yourself into doing it. So, like, a to-do list app is a fantastic example, because a lot of people want to do what is on their to-do list, but in the moment, people don't always want to do what's on their to-do list. So, you can do things like achievements, or, like, have achievements for constant, you know, for constant visiting your to-do app or checking things off, or like put a point system in there or something. Like, that's it. It is what it sounds like. It's making whatever task you're trying to do a game. Is that about right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was watching a TEDx video called Gamification to Improve Your World. We'll link to it in the show notes. And yeah, the sort of very, very basic level definition that the guy gave was it's using game elements to make boring work less boring, basically.
Yes.
And then people, he said, people instantly go to, well, game elements just means badges, points, and leaderboards like that. But it's actually much broader than that. There's a whole bunch of different ways of, I guess, the way that games build in different levels of strategy and sort of hidden things or things you need to find out along the way, or sort of quest type things, different things that are still game elements, mm-hmm. but they are a bit more strategic than just can I tick a box or earn a point or whatever. So it's not limited to that, although that's where people's heads sort of instinctively go. So that's cool. So we've got a pretty good working definition of that. Then I guess the thing is, how does gamification actually work? Like, it seems to be, like you said, it's big in the tech industry at the moment. Mm-hmm. I know it's also been big in the education world for quite a while.
Yeah.
So teachers have been studying gamification as a way of, even in traditional classrooms, how do we build in gamification as a way of sort of sparking engagement, which leads to deeper learning rather than just sort of regurgitation or whatever, putting up with the work.
Yeah, I have a teacher friend who's the science teacher in his school, does like a whole like almost like Dungeons and Dragons level like thing.
Oh, wow.
For his science classroom, because and the kids love it, that like being able to, you know, pick your class and levels and stuff.
Yeah. And I guess the danger with gamification in any sense, but probably more so in education than in other fields, is that you run the risk of making a really fun game that's memorable as a game, mm-hmm. rather than memorable as learning. Mm-hmm. So whether or not it achieves its outcome of instilling knowledge and skills into your audience is, I guess, a secondary question. They might just have a really fun time playing the game and then remember all the aspects to what the game was without remembering the takeaways that they were meant to have from that. But yeah, I think overall it seems to be something that I must admit, when I first heard of it, I kind of thought this is just a way of trying to somehow, in the secular world, redeem video games. Like, adults kind of don't necessarily know, particularly back in the sort of early 2000s, I guess, gaming was still seen as sort of something that teenagers did.
Mm-hmm.
Now those teenagers are like 35,
yep.
and they're still gaming, and so it's not that anymore.
Uh-huh.
But I kind of felt like when it was first being talked about, that this is just something that we're doing because we don't really know what box to put gaming in.
Ah.
And so we're trying to sort of bring it along for the ride into the rest of culture and say, well, it can actually be really useful and that sort of thing. But general impressions, like, what do you think it's a useful technique? Do you think it's got major downfalls that people aren't sort of aware of when they start exploring it? Or is it a good thing, basically? That's what I'm trying to
Yeah, well, I think it definitely has value. So the thing about gamification, though, is you're using it in order to accomplish something else, which is really the thing that you want to be doing. Right. So mm-hmm. it's kind of a half step. It's something that engages you to do the thing you actually want to do that you aren't engaged in, presumably, or else you wouldn't need the gamification technique. So mm-hmm. So ultimately, I see it as something of a crutch. It's a good mid step towards what you want to actually be doing. So like,
yeah.
Hopefully you're doing this, you know, if you're gamifying your to-do list, you hopefully want to be only needing to do that for a while until you really get into the flow of doing your to-do list, and then you don't need that gamification aspect anymore.
Yeah, Yeah.
And I can see, I can even see that for like, if you're fighting a serious temptation of some kind, like there's going through, like addictive temptations myself, like I can see the, like often you want to put, you want to have strategies to keep yourself from doing whatever it is. And, mm-hmm. but those aren't the things that should ultimately keep you from those temptations. It should be you fighting those temptations ultimately, because that doesn't last forever. You know, the gamifying is only part of the whole. So it's yeah. it's a good half step toward to help you. It's that crutch along the way till your leg heals.
I think that's probably a good way of looking at it. And I think mm-hmm. It's something that I think can, yeah, I would agree. I think it can be useful, but its use needs to be limited. Like, it's not that its use is inherently limited. I think you can probably apply it to a lot of different areas of life. But I think for the good of the people engaging in whatever the task is, like you said, it's ultimately probably better if they can use it for a time in order to kind of act as a motivator without becoming the only reason they do said task, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Yeah.
And the video that I was watching talked about the fact that really it exists to motivate our core drive. So he was saying there's actually things that he thinks are kind of underlying or built in or common to a lot of people. He called it octalysis, and he had 8 different areas. Things like epic meaning and calling, social influence and relatedness, ownership and possession. They're just a few of them. But things that are sort of common amongst people, mm-hmm. which they are core drives that we already have. And so gamification kind of then places on top of that a platform for that kind of brings those together with a much more, what is originally seen as a much more menial task or something that we wouldn't necessarily think has those elements in it.
Right.
And that makes that task more palatable or more interesting or more engaging, whatever wording you want to use there. I guess before we go to the break, my sort of final question on gamification itself, before we move into, I guess, a bit more application in a parenting sense, mm-hmm. is what do we learn? Is there stuff that we learn from video game theory or from gamification as a technique that value adds to, I guess, the Christian worldview, Christian lifestyle, or are there things that are really unhelpful? So, for example, you know, the thing of, like you've talked about, incentives is not necessarily a bad thing. But in the Christian worldview, I think it can be unhelpful to always just look at things in a sense of, well, what am I getting out of this? Mm-hmm. And how much is this benefiting me in the, you know, what's the final sort of output in my life going to be? And that doesn't mean, you know, I'm not discounting, I'm a big fan of Christian hedonism style thing where really everyone's ultimate goal is happiness, mm-hmm. and we only find happiness in God. I still would affirm that. Mm-hmm. But I just, you know, I think maybe selfishness can sort of be complemented or sparked further by gamification. Is there anything else that kind of as Christians and maybe even starting to think as parents that we would be wary of when using it with our children?
Yeah, that is I'm really glad you asked that question, because we can quickly start seeing kind of one of the base building blocks of Christianity is the term grace and the grace that we receive through Christ and his death for us on the cross, being that we don't do anything to deserve that. And in fact, as Reformed Christians, we see salvation as being God pulling us out of our sin and renewing us and making us new without us deserving anything. It's fully an act of, it's a full act of grace on God's behalf. Mm-hmm. Which means, like, we don't do anything for our salvation, which is an important thing to keep in mind with the whole gamification thing. Because if we start getting a mental process of, I'm doing these things in order to get something, that's not really what a Christian worldview is. It's about doing things because you have been given far more something grace already than you deserve. It's a fully, like, I'm doing these great things because I adore the God who has done so much good for me. Or that's one way to see it. All right, what do you think?
Yeah, the Christian life, I guess the Christian life lived out is a response, not a ticket to ride to heaven. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's, I mean, heaven is like a peace with God eternally is certainly an end result. But the way we live is living in response to what he's done for us, rather than living in order to get his favor or something like that, or to, you know, to get more good things out of him as the giver of good gifts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I would agree. All right. Well, I think what I really want to talk about is the actual finer points of this article, because I think there will be some interesting conversation about, well, particularly from maybe you and Tanya's perspective about some of this stuff. So maybe let's go to the break and then we'll come back and chat about what they had to say in the article.
All right. Sounds good. Our sponsor this week is Missionalware, your Reformed theology gift shop. Missionalware prints apparel, drinkware, and accessories with beautiful artwork of historical creeds, quotes, and faces of various reformers. And I just want to talk about this glass that I have from Missionalware that I've had for a while that I just kind of noticed it again today. I put my iced coffee in there. Oh, let me describe it here for just a second. It is the tumbler glass with the design, man's chief end is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. Beautiful glass. Yeah, you see? And boy, does it look good with some iced coffee and stuff in there. And I have my co-host over there is also repping the Missionalware logo on a sweatshirt and a t-shirt underneath.
I'm repping the Missionalware logo hoodie, and underneath that is a long sleeve tee with Post Tenebris Lux plastered on the chest part.
That is amazing. You are doing a way better job than I am right now.
I'm just, you know, I'm reformed to the T, apart from some
reformed
things.
Reformed to the T! So Missionalware has been making things since 2010, and they've grown an impressive library of designs and items that will appeal to anyone. So to check them out, to grab some apparel, drinkware, or accessories for yourself, you can go to missionalware.com to get your lifestyle on mission to the glory of God. Thanks to Missionalware for sponsoring Tech Reformation this week.
All right, so we talked a little bit about gamification, a bit more broadly, and what it is, and definitions and stuff. Now let's get into what this article talks about. This article is really saying that because kids know how to kind of work their way around adults and throw tantrums or, you know, basically, kids are pretty good at finding out what they need to do to get what they want to happen, to be the thing that happens. And so they're saying parents need some way of fighting back almost. They don't use that term, but keeping up is the term they use. They're actually promoting a book called The Game Theorist's Guide to Parenting, which I'm interested in reading, not because I think I'll agree with all of it, but just because I want to know what that guy says. But this is, they've given us, I guess, what? four things in this article that they like game strategies that they think can be applied pretty easily to parenting. I just want to run through them with Derek and see if what he thinks of each of them, if he thinks that he would just never ever use this or he might use this occasionally. Because I don't know about you, but we sort of just had to hit the 2-year-old mark, and I've noticed this considerable difference from 18 months to 2 years old, just in terms of willfulness of the child. And my son is a wonderful kid and very well behaved most of the time. But there's just some occasions where I'm like, this, you didn't used to do this kind of thing. And so there's a bit of a shift.
Wait, he knows what he wants and he wants to get it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's just developmental, a lot of it. And we're sort of trying to be consistent in the way that we parent him around those things and navigate through that stage. But I must admit, a couple of these, I was like, I can see maybe when he's a bit older, that might be useful. But I don't know that I'd subscribe to them maybe to this extent, or certainly wouldn't use them as a blanket tool or whatever. So anyway, let's get into it. The first one is called forced cooperation. And so it's talking about kids who, multiple children in one family, refuse to work together. The game strategy they're talking about employing is the prisoner's dilemma. So it says, assign them a task they can do jointly, like picking up the toys, and then give them each the same reward or punishment based on their performance as a team. So if one kid's not doing a good job, the other one's not going to want to do the job with them the next time round. and then they both don't get whatever the reward was for completing the task if they don't do it. So then they're both supposed to learn that if they both pitch in, they'll get it done better and quicker, they'll complete the task, and then they can move on to the next thing or to the reward.
Mm-hmm.
Forced cooperation, what do you think?
It's so hard. You'll find this out as we keep going. It's so hard for me to like feel good about any of these, just because we take punishment as like when we punish for something, it's a very, very serious thing. And so I'd have to see the situation as being very bad before like forcing a reward punishment system on our kids. Because we generally want to, you know, have more grace than judgment on parents. That's a whole different discussion. I'm going to get myself in trouble because I'm not going to be able to explain myself.
So a follow up question then is, do you use it? Let's force cooperation sounds really harsh.
Yes.
Do you use incentives with your children, or is that still
some? Some a little bit. Which is gamification of parenting in and of itself, actually. When you break it down, if you're...
Yeah, that's why I was asking.
If you're using something else to get a kid to do something, that is gamifying the situation instead of addressing the issue. A part of...
Except that's been happening for a lot longer than since the term gamification has been in existence.
Oh, yeah. You know it. That's the whole like reward punishment system in general.
That's just standard, standard life and parenting.
Yeah. Again, like what I was talking about before with gamification being a crutch. I would only use this if it was like if I absolutely had to have a crutch in order to get my kids to even talk to each other like that. You know what I mean?
Okay. Here's a situation.
Yes.
Emerson and Rainey.
Yes.
I can use their names on air, right?
Yes. Yeah, sure. Okay.
Emerson and Rainey are 3 and 4.5, 5 years old.
Uh-huh.
You and, or however, whatever the gap is.
Yeah, that's close.
They're both
enough.
Old enough to comprehend language well and even talk back and have reasonable discussions or whatever. You and Tanya and them are running really late to a family member's wedding.
Oh, no.
Which one of you is doing a reading at. So you have to be there and preferably on time. One of the children is throwing things and refusing to get into the car.
Uh-huh.
The other one is trying to help distract that child, like pull that child away from the car, get them to play games, not do what you and Tanya are asking them to do. Do you employ this strategy to try and get them into the, you know, when does it become enough that you go,
you're trying
right,
to pin me down, which is what you should be doing. Yeah. Oh man. I mean, most of the time, like if it's like a time sensitive thing, like I just go nuclear and pick them up and put them in their seats. I'm trying.
But then how do you not do that in anger? And I think it's so hard as a parent, like I've heard you and Tanya talk about, and not to borrow too much from Set to Learn, but you know, not wanting to raise your voice at your kids unless you really, or not wanting to yell at your kids, and not disciplining in anger. And I'm on board with those sentiments, but in the heat of the moment when things are really hard and you're pressed for time or whatever, that's when things like picking them up and putting them in the car can be even harder than it normally would be because you are in such a rush that you're just like, get in the way, do you know what I mean? And if they're kicking and screaming, that becomes a big problem.
Yeah.
And so I'm almost wondering, I don't know, I haven't hit this situation yet myself, but I'm almost wondering if I would in that, I guess the reason I'm asking, I think maybe I would in that situation go to some kind of fairly straightforward incentive system. You know, if you two can cooperate and do this for me, then we can later after the wedding, we can go here.
Go
or
get a,
do you know what
candy
I mean?
Bar. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't we go on to another,
Yeah, that's fine. Oh, there's actually 5.
Yes,
so
I'll try to go be less stubborn on these.
No, that's fine. It's fine. I mean, you know, these are all things that I'm sort of still trying to work out whether I would do. And some of them I definitely think are worse than others.
Mm-hmm.
The next one's called Make Them Pay. I don't like the titles. I'm just going to put that out there. I think I think the titles are really poorly constructed in terms of the thought process behind them, or maybe the emotion behind them. But anyway, make them pay. So then it's talking about the King Solomon problem. You know, some things you just can't cut in half. There's that story of the two women and the baby, and they're arguing over it. And so I think it's King Solomon says, it is King Solomon says, let's cut it in half. And then the woman who's the real mother says, no, the other one can have the baby because she doesn't want the baby to be cut in half.
Yeah.
And so then he lets the real mother have the child. So with their examples are things like who gets the bigger room or who gets to name the family pet. You know, where basically when a decision needs to be made and they both are trying to have equal stock in the decision making, how do you then get one decision out of multiple children?
So I would take, in that sort of a situation, I would take the gamification process down to a much lower level where you're interacting with life itself as a game. So presenting the idea, now this doesn't work as well with children that are like 3 and 5, but I kind of wonder how well it would work. I'm interested now as my children develop how problem solving they can be at whatever age, but presenting them with what's going on, this is what we have to do. We need to figure out who gets to do this or who gets to do that. And these are the constraints that we have, being that we can't both name the cat and let them figure it out. So have them help problem solve instead of it being just me. So, there some sort of an equity system isn't, I don't know that that's a terrible idea.
So they're talking about having your kids bid with chores or their allowance. that's what this is advocating for.
Yeah.
So that's the make it pay thing, is if one of them wants to name the cat and really, really wants it really badly, then they can spend their allowance on the opportunity to name the cat.
I'm not a huge fan of that one, but...
Yeah, I'm not a fan of this one. I don't think this is a good idea.
Yeah.
Because I think this gets kids to attach values to things all the time, when sometimes they just need to learn social skills instead, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
So like bidding for things and putting... Like, this is where I think, it could end up warping their Christian worldview as well. Like,
yeah.
Bidding for things and putting forward my, like, I've got this and this is really good, so this should win me the ability to do X.
And then you'll probably have a difference between the older and younger, and the older is going to have a higher advantage than the younger ones because they just have
and
more.
And so then you got to work out some relative scale of like, well, for that kid, this is more valuable. And so even, it's like the lady with the one coin.
Yeah.
Like, that's all she had and she still gave it. Whatever. So, I find this one relatively unhelpful.
Yeah.
And I probably would steer away from that one. All right. You happy to move on?
Yeah. So the next one is, the title is Threaten Them for Real. This basically is talking about like screaming that don't make me turn this car around never works. This is what Zolman, is he the author of the book?
He's the author of the book. Yeah.
Hey, that's what he calls a non-credible threat. Kids see through it because they know it means you'll suffer too. So pick punishments that benefit you. Stop punching your sister. We're going to grandma's instead of the movies. What do you think? I'll throw this over to you first.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Turn it back on me.
Yeah.
That's only fair. I don't think I've ever used don't make me turn this car around, because that doesn't seem to make any sense anyway. The kid generally doesn't care what direction the car's going.
Yeah.
I don't think I use this very often. And I think the reason I don't use this very often is again, probably, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, because I think it imposes bad ideas on the kid's way of thinking in general. Stop X or else we're going to do this that you don't like. I would tend to prefer to do more of like a, if you do the positive, then there will be this result down the track. And try and show them that just actually behaving, more naturally and less digging their heels in every step of the way mm-hmm. will mean that we can have a better end result anyway.
Yeah.
Like, you know, doing the right thing in this situation will help you. And that might be an incentive. Like, you know, my son loves reading books at the moment. So the number of books he has before bed could be, you know, you can have more books. You can have 10 books instead of 3 books or something. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I might use an incentive there. But just a straight out threat, like, if you don't do this, then we're going to do this because you've been a bad person mm-hmm. and whatever. I think that just becomes like a guilt, shame, punishment
mm-hmm.
with no positive to that, really.
Yeah.
It's just, here's your action, here's your punishment, and there's no restoration.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean punishment isn't important, but I think I'd want to frame punishments a little bit differently to that. And
yeah.
So in situations like that, I probably wouldn't use it.
Yeah. And the punishment that they give it as an example here, you know, stop punching your sister, we're going to grandma's instead of the movies. They're going to grow up resenting going to grandma's house.
Yeah.
And you don't right. want that.
Negative association.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think a good part of this that we should pull out is letting the consequences of their actions be real.
Yeah.
So we talk about this a lot with Rainey about, because Emerson doesn't know anything yet. he's just a little baby. But that if she takes a certain action, these are the outcomes, you know, and if you take yeah. this action, this is the outcome. And then we try to stick as close as possible with that outcome. And we do this whole logic-based parenting or natural consequences or whatever. Natural consequences are best. Like, if she spills water all over her bed, then her bed is wet and she may find that uncomfortable and she gets to see mm-hmm. what that consequence is. You can, and sometimes those are really brutal if you don't step in as a parent, which this will probably come in later with the don't bail them out thing. So they can be super helpful teaching tools, although sometimes they are a little bit severe and it's wise to step in with grace as a parent. But yeah, making sure the consequences are real and that you're not just threatening them to hope that they, you know, trust that there is a punishment that they will not like. Like, yeah. You don't want to lie to your kids with punishments.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's probably a time for both as well. Like, there's a time to just let natural consequences play out, and then there's a time for grace as a parent,
yeah.
but you need to work, you need to be smart, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. We can see that in scripture, you know, like Israel wanted a king. God told them that he was their king. They said, we still want a king. He let them have a king and it went bad.
Mm-hmm.
So that consequence got to play out
mm-hmm.
With Saul and then David sort of restored a little bit, quite a lot, but there were still problems there, even in David's life, which pointed us to Jesus. And then obviously with salvation, God isn't letting the consequences play out. You know, at least not for his people. He's saving his people by grace. And so, not that I'm trying to inject us into scripture in that way, but just, you know, I think that principle of there are some situations where the punishment needs to play out for the kid to learn a particular thing. And then there are other situations where we can step in, I guess, as parents who can see the bigger picture and act with more grace in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree? Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. So that actually kind of leads very nicely into this next one, which is the make them lie. If you suspect your kids haven't done their homework, nail them with specific questions. What subject? What did you learn? How long did it take? Hardest part, even if they manage convincing answers, the act of sustaining an elaborate lie exerts psychological discomfort. And eventually they'll figure out that being honest is just easier.
I think I'd use this one.
Yeah.
If I'm honest. Yeah. I don't really see a huge problem with this
mm-hmm.
because I think lying is something that children do and adults do, but not to the same, maybe not as frequently, but I think it's just like a habit. Like mm-hmm. it's something that comes fairly naturally to people
mm-hmm.
and particularly through the school years when if kids just really don't want to do their homework, I can see this particular scenario
yeah.
being fairly common.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's actually pretty wise. Like, yeah. you know, if it seems like your kid is telling you a complete untruth because their answer is not reflecting a realistic answer, mm-hmm. then probe a little further and see if they can actually back up what they've originally said. And if they can, then they can. But if they can't, then you probably have recourse to then go a step further and implement a little bit more, I don't know, discipline, or maybe just, you know, having a talk about what actually needs to happen and why, and the benefits of, in this case, education and needing to do certain things to achieve certain outcomes and whatever. Mm-hmm. Again, the, you know, having good consequences in the long run, on their own for themselves, not just because you are imposing it on them.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I think this is just seems to be not a unwise way to go about it.
Yeah.
Not an unwise. That's too, double negative. you know what I mean?
Yeah. So this is a classic example actually of what natural consequences are. Like if lying exerts, it is psychologically discomforting, then that's a great reason to not lie. But for like very moral things, like issues like this, I do think we need to season it with the law of God and make sure that they know mm-hmm. that what they are doing, whether it's comfortable for them to do or not, or whether they've gotten whether they've gotten good at lying or not, that they need to know that God does not approve of lying and that it is a sin and they need to repent. Mm-hmm. So yeah, good technique, but again, like a halfway point to the ultimate goal of wanting them to know that lying does not glorify their creator. And yeah, anyway.
Yep. Okay, the last one, don't bail them out. So they're basically saying, if you want this stuff to work, you have to buckle down. If your kid's in a bit of trouble and sobbing pitifully, resist the urge to swoop in and save them by remembering something called moral hazard, which they're saying in big business and things like that, if you always just bailing out your employees when they've done the wrong thing, then you're incentivizing their bad behavior. So they're saying have clear rules and mete out punishment when necessary. I don't know what you think about that, Derek. I'll let you go first on this one.
Well, so I will say...
Is this still just natural consequences, do you think?
Yeah, definitely natural consequences.
Although they are talking about meting out punishment.
Yeah, so like if you're meting out punishment, then it can be more than natural consequences. It can be, you know, more harsh punishments or whatever. I will say in response to this that God has totally bailed me out from an eternity apart from him. But at the same time, he does... You know, he does enact, you know, natural consequences on me for misbehaving. So
well, that's part of sanctification, right? Like I think we learn. I mean, it's even for the non-Christian, they learn from making mistakes mm-hmm. and having the consequences of those mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think, you know, the same thing can then happen when we become believers. It's just that we're being conformed into a different image.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is the trickiest thing to get the balance on. I will say that it should never be your policy to never bail them out, because kids will need bailed out sometimes, you know, like, and they're going to, and if they don't see you as an ally, like as a parent, you are presumably an ally to your child, trying to help them get through this world that they're learning about. And, you know, helping them get through is important. Sometimes you do need to bail them out. Sometimes letting them play out can be a good teaching tool as well. But if they're really repentant, I would say bailing them out is a good thing. Giving them grace is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they need to, I guess the bottom line here is they need, like you said, they need to get both sides. They need to understand law and gospel distinction,
mm-hmm.
and they need to understand where we as Christian people and children of a gracious and loving God,
mm-hmm.
Who is also, you know, a God of wrath and a God of justice, but ultimately to his people, he shows grace. And so, you know, law and gospel need to go together, not one or the other, particularly not law by itself, because that's just legalism and,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's not helpful in the long run. So, and I think that's probably a good place to wrap. You know, we are, we're wanting our kids to develop into people who are more like Jesus. And so we always need to, I think, be presenting or parenting them in a way that encourages them to see what he's done for them and what the grace that he's shown and then how they can live in response. So the idea of them living in response to him as well is something we want them to pick up on. And so I think, yeah, it's not, I wouldn't ever bind anyone's conscience to say you should never use any of these techniques, but use them with wisdom in terms of how you apply them. And I think try to steer clear of making everything just about, you know, if you do this, then you get this, like we talked about right at the mm-hmm. beginning, or being too sort of punishment heavy and legalistic in terms of, you know, it's all just about ticking boxes and things like that. So I think, yeah, I think what you sort of brought up there, that law and gospel distinction is important. Do you have any other concluding thoughts?
And I just realized now that I have so many more opinions yet on this whole like tech versus parenting sort of thing. I'll try to keep it short and summarized with this. Gamification is such a tech industry thing to do. Technology or the tech industry that we have currently is all about efficiency and figuring out how to do something the fastest or easiest or whatever. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, that does not work in parenting. It is no. like the opposite.
You're in for the long haul.
Yeah. It is not easy to parent. There's no like shortcut to helping your kids understand emotionally the world around them and help them make good choices. Because technology is all about abstracting the problem into something that's easier, right? Mm-hmm. Bring back the favorite shovel analogy. A shovel is about abstracting the problem of
no.
digging a hole. Like, you don't want to use your hands. That's way more difficult. So you get a shovel, and that makes it way easier. But there's nothing in parenting that, as far as like, yeah, the gamification should be used sparingly, I think.
The book is called The Game Theorist's Guide to Parenting, not The Game Theorist's Solution to Parenting, and I think that's probably a significant distinction.
Yeah, probably.
it's not a solution, but yeah. So anyway, maybe we should continue the conversation in the Slack. I think there's more we can say about this, and it's something that I've sort of only just started thinking about recently. As I said, my kids are probably a little bit young to... We've got a 7-week-old and a just 2-year-old. So a lot of these things are not quite where we're at the moment anyway, but worth thinking about, and worth thinking about how, particularly as Christian parents, we would like to, parent our kids in a way that ultimately brings glory to God and points our children to them and His grace mm-hmm. And His goodness. And Him as Father, ultimately, mm-hmm. As the Father that I actually can never be. So, we'll leave that there, and feel free to connect with us in Slack to talk about it more.
Mm-hmm. And you can also hit us up on Twitter at Tech Reformation. You can DM us or at message us or, you know, whatever you want to do there.
And you can check out our website, techreformation.com, to see our back catalog and look at all the past shows we've done. 134 past shows.
Wow.
It'll take you a little while.
Yep. Did we ever actually give the URL for the Slack?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, let's do that quick. You can go to slack.techreformation.com to sign up for that, for the Slack that Craig was talking about. We'd love to hear your opinion on stuff. This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week. And I ain't looking back. No, I ain't looking back.